From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the aftermath of the Paris attacks, there's a new clamor to take down ISIS in Syria and Iraq, to go into those countries and take out the caliphate directly. We're already bombing away, but we haven't sent in significant combat troops to fight. President Obama insists that America won't, shouldn't. He's taking a lot of heat on that right now. This hour On Point, a passionate case for and a fierce argument against the United States going in, going big, in the fight against ISIS. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on, what's it going to take? What's the right way to go? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York, Roger Cohen, columnist for the New York Times, where he writes about international affairs and diplomacy. He's said it's time for Western rage and NATO intervention, troops on the ground against ISIS. You can link to his column, Body Bags in Paris, at our website, onpointradio.org. Roger Cohen, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
And with me in the studio is Barry Posen, professor of political science at MIT. He's director of the Securities Studies Program there, author of Restraint, a New Foundation for U.S. Grand Strategy. He argues restraint and containment are still the way to go. You can link to his recent essay in The Atlantic, Contain ISIS, at our website, onpointradio.org. Barry Posen, welcome back to you as well. Thank you for coming in.
Hello, Tom, and hello, Roger.
Roger Cohen, first to you. Your lament from Paris, which you know well, has been sharp and strong. You wrote, the West post-Iraq has lost its capacity for rage, even at this. That is dangerous. And you write, to defeat ISIS in Syria and Iraq will require NATO forces on the ground. Could you describe what you think is the right move now, Roger?
Well, Tom, I think something fundamental has changed in the last month or so. ISIS was cast by the president and by a lot of other people as essentially a local threat and an odious entity, but something that could be contained. Well, it turns out that by allowing ISIS to control territory, a lot of territory across Syria and Iraq, in effect, it has been able to turn its attention further afield. And what we've seen in the last month or so is that it is not a local threat. It is a global threat. It wants to bring its medievalist reading of the Quran and all the brutality that goes with that to the whole of Western civilization. And we've seen 129 people slaughtered in Paris, more than 220 brought down in a Russian plane that was bombed by ISIS. And I think, therefore, the question arises, as it did post 9/11, can you allow an organization that is prepared to do this to hold territory which enables it to enrich itself, to plan, to organize, to draw recruits, to portray itself as a caliphate in reality, where it can enslave women and children, practice every form of brutality, some of which we've seen, the beheading of Jim Foley and others. Can we allow the Islamic State, after all this, to continue to do what it has done? And my answer to that is no. And therefore, I argue that a plan has to be put in place to retake this territory.
And that to be done, you write, by NATO forces on the ground. In the lead?
Well, it involves how exactly. I am not going to set out the precise modalities of that. I don't feel that I can do that. But certainly it involves American leadership. It would involve, of course, local forces. Kurdish forces have proved effective against ISIS. These guys are effective terrorists. There's very little to show that they are effective soldiers. It would involve, of course, although it's been very reluctant to fight the Iraqi army, it would involve Turkey, a NATO ally that has played very much a double game up to now, in that President Erdogan in Turkey clearly prefers to use ISIS against the Kurds rather than fight ISIS all out. And he has allowed a very porous border to continue to exist that has allowed ISIS to grow and recruit and generally strengthen itself. So it involves local forces, but it involves American leadership, and it involves a readiness to put special forces and others on the ground. I don't believe that ISIS, you know, you said go in big.
That is out there, you know, now. That is certainly...
Yeah, go in big. Well, how big? Many assessments that I've seen talk of a force of perhaps 15,000, 20,000. And, you know, the danger with history is that, of course, we allow the most recent history to dominate our thinking. We forget that after 9/11, the initial moves against al-Qaeda's haven in Afghanistan were effective. And that territory was retaken. And it was only when the huge distraction, disastrous distraction of Iraq emerged that the progress that was made there was lost. So I think we need to recall that, you know, interventionism, as Iraq showed, can be disastrous. I don't think anyone can argue that Syria illustrates that non-interventionism works.
Roger Cohen, please stand by. It's great to have you here. Barry Posen, there's the argument. Roger Cohen writes that hesitation has been Obama's modus operandi on Syria, and says, well, you hear it. The territories must be retaken, actively retaken, not containment, but retaking. What do you say, Barry?
Well, I think caution has been the president's watchword, and I think it's been an intelligent strategy for him. You know, it's certainly understandable to react with passion, emotion, rage at the terrible things that happened in Paris and the aftermath. But I think we should understand that our adversaries are trying to trigger intense emotions, and they hope that under the influence of intense emotions, we will make big mistakes. Now, I think we should stand back and look at how the president's strategy has been working, ask where it has had success, ask where it has not had success, and consider how to repair it. Now, when ISIS emerged on the scene in its sort of full force of tactical success in the region, it had local momentum. It struck fear into the heart of its adversaries. People were afraid that defenses would crumble on every border, that an ever-growing caliphate was an imminent problem. And with the investment of a few advisors, a few airstrikes, a few million dollars worth of munitions, the president and others in the region have managed to put a pretty strong palisade around the areas that ISIS controls. And in fact, ISIS overreached mainly into areas that are not populated by Sunni Arabs, such as in Kurdistan and in some parts of central and southern Iraq, that where there are Shia majorities or strong Shia minorities. And in those areas, locals have had the solidarity and the commitment to push back with our help to liberate their brethren. Right. Well, this is a pretty impressive achievement for a very low cost. So now we find that ISIS, I wouldn't say much to our surprise, but certainly against what we hoped would remain the case when this policy began, we find that they're reaching out to become global terrorists in the same way that al-Qaeda did. Now, there are several explanations for this. One of the explanations, and it's not just mine, if you're following the press, mm-hmm. you'll see it coming from people who study ISIS more closely than I do, that this is in part a response to the success of the strategy that we've had. ISIS needs a steady diet of telegenic victories to bring it support. And we've deprived it of a steady diet of telegenic victories. In fact, we've started to administer some defeats. So they have reached out to soft targets to try and renew the image of momentum that they rely on for recruitment, right? And we missed that trick. I think it's wrong to call it an intelligence failure, because what we usually see after these is there's plenty of data. But it certainly was an intelligence interpretation failure, right? And we have to look at some of the things we need to do to make it hard for ISIS to operate abroad.
Can we leave them with their territory? Roger Cohen says, no, you have to retake it. You have to essentially shut down the caliphate. I mean, look, Brussels is on lockdown today. Paris is paralyzed.
Sure, but just because one can imagine a solution doesn't make the solution implementable or wise, right? So it would be nice if we could press a button and make ISIS go away, disappear it from history, right? Now, we tried disappearing al-Qaeda from history. We tried disappearing radical jihadism from history. We've used the policy of going out and meeting the adversary on their home turf in two countries, and in neither country has it been conspicuously successful. It wasn't successful in Afghanistan, and in Iraq there was no ISIS, there was no al-Qaeda, and we created the space for it. So we're talking about an area, right, in Iraq and Syria that has perhaps 6 or 8 million people in it. There's at least people seem to believe a minimum of 20,000 ISIS fighters, right? To go there and extirpate this group is a much bigger job than the advocates of more action would like you to believe. And by the way, given our experience, it's likely that there will be unintended consequences that will themselves come back to bite us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new push after Paris to send U.S. troops or ramp up into the Middle East in force to take out ISIS, and the fierce pushback against that. Roger Cohen is with us this hour, columnist for The New York Times, writes about international affairs and diplomacy. His column, Body Bags in Paris, says the West has lost its capacity for rage. The United States needs to show more spine. The spine is missing with the current strategy, and it's time to ramp up. Plenty of Republicans on the campaign trail prepared to say the same thing. Hillary Clinton talking about ramping up, though exactly what that means in her case, maybe something a little different from the Republicans. Barry Posen is with us this hour, professor of political science at MIT. His big essay, Contain ISIS, was published in The Atlantic in the last few days. He's author of Restraint, A New Foundation for U.S. Grand Strategy. All kinds of reaction after the deadly, deadly shootings and bombings in Paris. Here was the French President Hollande. This was last Wednesday, saying it's time for the international community to get together, take out Daesh, as they call ISIS.
I've called on the international community to take its part of responsibility in what can only be a common task to wipe out Daesh.
Anéantir Daesh.
Plenty ready to talk big on this front. November 12th, here's Donald Trump in Fort Dodge, Iowa, saying he'd go after ISIS oil assets.
I would bomb the out of them.
And big applause right there for Mr. Trump. President Obama in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia yesterday talked about the U.S. response to the attacks in Paris. He said defeating ISIS, ISIL, is a realistic goal.
Destroying ISIL is not only a realistic goal, we're going to get it done and we're going to pursue it with every aspect of American power and with all the coalition partners that we've assembled. It's going to get done.
But don't make ISIS into something, ISIL into something more than it is, said the president.
The most powerful tool we have to fight ISIL is to say that we're not afraid, to not elevate them, to somehow buy into their fantasy that they're doing something important.
Back home, Republicans saying it's the president in a fantasy, creating a crisis. Here's Chris Christie, New Jersey governor.
His failure to enforce his red line, his invitation for Russia to come into Syria, his inaction as this crisis has spiraled out of control has created this crisis. And now he wants the American people to absorb this crisis that he's created.
Roger Cohen says it's time to retake the caliphate. Take it away, shut it down. That means going in heavier, stronger. We'll talk about exactly what it might mean. Barry Posen says restraint is working. Contain ISIS. It's already in trouble. Roger Cohen, you heard Barry Posen's argument there. The failures that we saw in Afghanistan and Iraq, ultimately, the creation of ISIS. He says the success in its way of the Obama policy so far. What do you say, Roger?
Yeah, Barry argued that a low-cost policy has been broadly successful and the president has erected, I think he's called it, a pretty strong palisade against ISIS. Well, tell that to 129 kids in Paris. Tell that to more than 220 passengers on a Russian plane. Tell that to 110 Kurds in Ankara. This pretty strong palisade doesn't look pretty strong to me. In fact, it looks feeble. And I don't think that the policy the president has pursued up to now has been successful. I think it's been a failure. Look, the Islamic State has declared all-out war on us. All-out war on us. That is clear. There are no barriers, moral or otherwise, to what they are prepared to do against us. They're in an all-out battle against us. And President Obama says, we'll get it done. No date. We'll don't elevate them. And Barry argues that slowly, slowly, we're getting the better of them. But they're using this time to do things. And we've seen just what those things are in Paris and elsewhere. And there's another aspect to this that we haven't talked about, and that is the moral aspect and the nature of evil. The United States hesitated for a very long time before getting involved in World War II, but it did in the end because it recognized the Third Reich for what it was, an incarnation of evil. I am not comparing the Islamic State to the Nazis, but I do believe that we are confronted by a force, ISIS, that represents something absolutely nefarious and unacceptable that denies everything that we in the West believe in, and also everything that the vast majority of Muslims around the world believe in. And so while I understand that the experiences of Afghanistan and Iraq have inclined us in the West, and the United States in particular, toward restraint. And I think some of the restraint President Obama showed in other areas has been positive. I think that we are confronted today by a moral question which requires a strong military response from the United States of America, still the leader of the free world, to take out the territory from which the Islamic State is able to plan acts of pure evil against us.
What do you think that's going to take, Roger? I mean, you wrote that it was time for NATO forces on the ground. You demurred a little bit when I raised that just now. Are you backing away from
that? No, I'm not backing away. It does involve NATO forces, but I'm not trying to divorce that from the responsibility of other actors in the region. I feel very strongly about the role Turkey has played, and President Erdogan in particular. He used ISIS against the Kurds. There were two attacks against the Kurds, one in July and one in October, both perpetrated by the same family belonging to ISIS. The Turkish security services knew very well about this, but President Erdogan preferred to play ISIS against the Kurds and create an atmosphere of unrest that played favorably for him in that election. I also feel in the election which he won, I also feel very strongly about the role of Saudi Arabia, our ally, which, like Turkey, has played a double game and whose Wahhabi philosophy of fundamentalist Islamic teaching has played a big role in the growth of organizations like ISIS around the world. The Kurds obviously can play a very important role, and one would certainly hope that the Iraqi army can too. But it does require American forces on the ground, and it requires – the mood in Britain has changed very considerably. I was reading polls that show a majority of people in Britain now favor the use of ground troops. So I think there is a mood swing. Clearly, the French have very, very strong feelings about this. I do not believe the United States should go in alone, and I don't believe that the size of the force required to crush ISIS is huge. So, no, I'm not backing away from my argument. Mm-hmm. I think we need to go in there and take Raqqa, take it down, kick ISIS out of there.
Barry Posen, Roger writes, the West has lost its spine, a spine called America. Now, you know, whatever you think about the strategy broadly, very broadly, that he's brushing here, you know, Roger, somebody who has a sense of what the region, of the way people are thinking. He says these barbaric terrorists cannot be allowed any longer to control territory once they're able to organize, finance, direct, and plan their savagery. This has a lot of appeal to a lot of people right now that are worried.
Right. But the point is not that ISIS isn't a threat to the region or isn't a threat to the safety of people living in Western countries. The question is, how big a threat is it, and what is the most – I'll use the language of cost effectiveness here, but it doesn't capture it. What is the most what is the smartest strategy for dealing with this group? Now, Roger himself just talked about his unhappiness with Turkey and his unhappiness with Saudi Arabia, right? I'm very chary, reluctant to try and use American troops directly on the ground in the Middle East again to solve a problem that is energized by countries that call themselves our allies and who benefit from our protection.
But can we just let this burn?
No, well, just a second here, right? Mm-hmm. We're not just letting it burn. Every day, American airplanes fly over the areas controlled by ISIS. American intelligence assets are all over the area. ISIS leaders can't sleep in the same place twice, I'm pretty sure. They have to be extremely careful in whatever they do. They have to move about their real estate with incredible prudence and care to avoid being killed by airplanes. There's a lot of things being done to abrade ISIS's strength where it is. That's point one. Point two, and I'll say it again, mm-hmm. We, but especially our allies in Europe, right, have still not done enough to put barriers between the real estate controlled by ISIS and our own countries, right? Turkey is part of that barrier, right? If Turkey isn't going
to... Should be, could be, isn't.
It has to be. If there's no solution in Turkey, there's no solution, right? But second, as we've seen from ample newspaper coverage in the last few days, right, European intelligence services have been and police services have been at sixes and sevens, right? They don't cooperate. They don't share information. They've been under-resourced. It's not that they didn't know about these people. It's that there were all kinds of seams and gaps and barriers that they should have plugged long ago.
But is it really
right?
Geographic? The argument is made that just by standing there, ISIS becomes a beacon, becomes a rallying cry. Any number of the people involved in these things didn't even come from the region. They're French-born, Brussels.
But the point is, if ISIS can be weakened, contained, abraded, if its agents can be intercepted and incarcerated, right? If its leaders are under death sentences, right? If we can deprive ISIS of the illusion of success, the illusion of vitality, right? Then this beacon role that Roger says it serves, and I'll take him at his word, this beacon is going to become a lot duller, right? And over time, right, either the organization will atrophy or it will become vulnerable to local predation. Roger talks about Kurds and Shia, maybe Syrian Arabs. These people are not going to fight on the offense until ISIL looks weak, and our job is to weaken it, right? Then this is a long-term strategy. But it has some benefits, right? And that is that the local politics and the local solutions will be owned by local people. And if they are, they have a better likelihood, I think, of being sustained than if the West comes in and essentially drives ISIS out of the cities, but then tries to, itself to reorganize the politics of the region to inoculate it against ISIS. At this, we have conspicuously failed. And to try it again strikes me as being, I don't want to use a pejorative language here, but certainly I would say futile.
Roger?
Well, I'm tempted to ask Barry if there would be a tipping point for him. If what had happened in Paris had happened in New York, would he feel the same? If there was some other large-scale massacre in Hamburg or Milan, would he feel the same? Is there a tipping point at which this gradualism becomes unacceptable?
I can't predict my own emotions. I mean, if we want to have a conversation about emotions, I guess we can. But we've been at this for what, 14 years now,
and I can
admit that after 9/11, my reactions were quite emotional, and I'm not sure all the actions of our country that flowed from that emotional state were all wise and conducive to solutions.
Absolutely not.
So my role here, perhaps self-appointed, is to try and keep a cool head. I mean, we have plenty of people out there, including you, and I respect your reasons for making the argument, who will say, look, we can't wait, we have to go. But I smell that this is the reaction that the other side wants.
Why would they want this? Because
they can't. It's
to lose Raqqa, to lose the caliphate, to be rolled up, rolled over. If that's indeed what would ensue.
But flip it on its head.
How does that make them a stronger beacon if they're defeated?
I don't believe they think they're going to be defeated in the sense that we think they're going to be defeated. Right. And B, I think
the Taliban's still there in Afghanistan, waiting now to come back if they give them
the
chance.
The Al Qaeda banner flies across Syria today. I mean, I don't know why you think Al Qaeda has been extirpated. It hasn't.
From Afghanistan.
We had a bunch of killings in Mali the other day that were credited to the Al Qaeda side of the ledger. Right. So I think that they have a notion of theater. So just imagine this. Right. You're an ISIS fighter. Right. American airplanes come over your real estate, your self-described caliphate every day. And every day they kill some of your friends. And there's not a single thing you can do about it. Nothing. You don't have a weapon. All you can do is dig into the dirt and hope they don't see you.
And wait for an opportunity. Or kill people in Paris.
They want to kill people in Paris, and we haven't done enough.
That's what they do.
Stephen Walt writes in Foreign Policy just in the last few days. He says, regrettably, events such as the Paris attacks will remain a recurring feature of 21st century life. But to repeat, they are not an existential threat. Are you saying, Barry Posen, that this is part of the cost of a long-term containment policy that we have to just live with attacks like we've seen in Paris?
Well, I'm not going to say it's the cost of a long-term containment policy. I guess I would make a larger observation that we built a world, and that world is characterized by travel and communications and open borders and the internet and the spread of education and the free flow of technical knowledge that allows people to learn how to build IEDs and to use secure
– Maybe ISIS can't
comlinks.
Fit in that world.
They seem to fit in it well enough to do damage, and the only point that I would make is that there is some element of risk that we have built into the world that we built, and it's part of the price of the world that we built. Now, ISIS per se, right? I believe we should do a whole series of things that I've talked about to try and make their lives difficult, to make their future bleak.
Maybe the price is that we have to police the whole thing. Maybe the price is not tolerance of terrorism, but policing the
global. You are policing the whole thing.
Not very effectively.
I guess if you look at the potential for damage that's inherent in Western societies, and you look at the openness that we've created, mm-hmm. It's a kind of a wonder that things aren't a lot worse.
I I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new push after Paris to send U.S. troops into the Middle East in force to take out ISIS, along with allies and all the rest, and the fierce pushback to that. Barry Posen is with us from the Security Studies Program at MIT. Roger Cohen is with us, columnist for the New York Times, spent a long time in Paris and knows the Middle East well. He has written, it is time for NATO forces on the ground here for rage, for some more American spine, as he has put it. Barry Posen says, constraint, restraint, contain, and a little patience here maybe is, he says, the wiser way to go. You can join us this hour. What do you see? What's needed here now? Roger Cohen says, get in there. Take ISIS has to be kicked out. Barry Posen says, do not escalate. Who's right? And if ISIS is reaching out, do we have to reach in? Jeb Bush in Charleston, South Carolina last week saying, it's going to take more than air power now.
While air power is essential, it cannot bring the results we seek. The United States, in conjunction with our NATO allies and more Arab partners, will need to increase our presence on the ground.
President Obama last week still skeptical on going in and retaking territory.
We can retake territory. And as long as we leave our troops there, we can hold it. But that does not solve the underlying problem of eliminating the dynamics that are producing these kinds of violent extremist groups.
The president is saying it's still kind of a whack-a-mole problem. Let's say you get it solved in Syria and Iraq, at least for a while. What about elsewhere?
Let's assume that we were to send 50,000 troops into Syria. What happens when there is a terrorist attack generated from Yemen?
And on it goes. Roger Cohen, Barry Posen, stand by. Lots of callers for the two of you. Matt in Viroqua, Wisconsin. Matt, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that we need to unleash our military. I understand that as a country we are war-weary and for good reason, and it's not fair that we should bear the burden to eliminate these threats. And I understand that ISIS spans several countries and that the political situation is very difficult. However, how many more attacks is it going to take, like the one in Paris, before we finally are spurred into action? And if there are many more attacks, we will have no choice but to be, so why wait? Right now, Russia's showing us up. I feel like Russia is doing more, almost, than we are. I'm military myself. Before, I'm an Army reservist, and before that, I was a paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne Division with two deployments. So I understand, the sacrifice that's required. However, we're the most capable military on the planet, and therefore I think we have some amount of responsibility.
Matt, I appreciate your call. Barry Posen, this kind of brings Roger Cohen's question back. What would be a tipping point for you in terms of ISIS reaching out to hit the U.S. or other interests around the world? And what about this new factor, since the last time we talked, Russia showing us up there? If Russia is successful, will they set the table post ISIS, if that's what it is? And is that all right?
Well, I guess ISIS would have to prove to me with a wave of very successful attacks that they constituted a not exactly a mortal threat, because it's very hard to destroy a Western country from afar, but a threat that we simply could not get our arms around through the vast amounts of money and resources that we throw at intelligence and security, and that has not been proven yet, right? And people say, well, why should we wait for them to prove it? And I'll tell you why.
It's a very successful...
Because as the president says, right, if you're playing global whack-a-mole is not going to give you perfect security, right? And the modalities of an intervention in this part of the world, right, and making that intervention produce the outcome you want, right, which is an end of ISIS and an end of direct threats to the United States, this is a major strategic effort. People should be forced in these discussions to stop speaking in euphemisms. There are something like 6 or 8 million Sunni Arabs living under ISIS rule today. Right. There are at least 20 or 30,000 people who apparently are fighting in the organization, maybe more.
So
many of the Sunni Arabs who live in this part of the world were hostile to the Baghdad regime. They're not going to greet us coming back with the Baghdad regime by our side as liberators. They're going to greet us as conquerors. right? So the project that's being discussed here is not a raid on Raqqa with an air cav brigade.
Mm-hmm.
The policy that's being discussed here is the conquest and occupation of a very large piece of real estate that has many millions of people in it. Now, we have rules of thumb for assessing the kinds of forces that are needed to do things like this, right? And the president's 50,000 number was probably just the ante in the poker game. It's closer to a 100,000 soldier problem. Right. Now, when people talk about allies in the region, is there any reason to believe that Sunni Arabs are going to want to live under Turkish governance, Kurdish governance, Shiite Arab governance, U.S. governance? Right. People have to think not only about the first blush of victory when at some cost we can surely drive ISIS out of these towns, but how you're going to extirpate ISIS in this region and what you're going to replace it with that's going to keep them extirpated. This is a major project of nation and state building and one that really nobody in the region actually wants you to succeed at because they don't want a Sunni Arab state there.
Roger Cohen, I get that you and Barry may have different degrees of pain you're willing to tolerate by acts of terror like we saw in Paris. Let us set that aside for a moment, and I understand that's you're reluctant to do that. You haven't done that already in this hour. You haven't done that. But what about on the backside of this? What about Barry's assertion that we may be talking about 100,000 troops here and all the inheritance that comes with it if Raqqa can be cleared, if Mosul can be cleared? But the then what question, Roger?
Well, Tom, first of all, those were moving words, I thought, from Matt, a man who knows mm-hmm. what military sacrifice is and who believes, even after what this country has done since 9/11, that the particular threat posed by ISIS is one that needs to be confronted by the U.S. military. And I really think that the president in that brief extract from what he was saying mm-hmm. In Turkey, I believe it was, did himself a disservice because he to pose a straw man of the kind that we can't solve every problem in the world, therefore we can't begin to solve the ISIS crisis is just wrong. I think the number of 100,000 used by Barry is way, way over the top. I've seen much lower numbers in the region of 20,000. And I think we also need to some degree to pass this a little. Look, in Syria, there's a war that's been going on for 4.5 years. It has had absolutely cataclysmic consequences. As Governor Christie noted earlier in the show, there was a red line set by the president. French planes were revving up, ready to go. The president went for a walk and decided to pull back. And I think that had a disastrous effect too, and it undermined America's word in the world, and that's a very serious thing. So, to your point, Tom, do we want somewhere we have to draw a line in Syria? Do we want another 10 years of this? I don't think that's acceptable. Do we want another 2 years of this? I don't think that's acceptable. And you have a convergence, at least in part, of Russian and Western interests on the idea that the Islamic State, the territory it holds, needs to be eliminated. Do we want to be part of an end game in Syria? Just exactly what that end game is, I don't know. But do we want to be part of an end game? And are we better part of an end game, having taken back the territory within Syria, at least, that is controlled by ISIS, than as spectators? I think if we're spectators, that will have terrible consequences once again. So I think there's
why,
also a strategic...
Why, Roger? What do you think? You're assuming there that Russia would somehow take the lead in clearing...
Well, I think... I don't think that President Bashar al-Assad is part of the solution. I think he's part of the problem, and I think Iran and Moscow would certainly have wanted to preserve Assad in power, and I think Russia certainly would for a period of time. And I don't think that a Russian-imposed solution on Syria is going to work. There has to be somehow the outcome there has to be somehow a reflection of the various interests of the parties involved. So I think there's also a strategic argument. There could be a strategic argument for the case I'm making within Syria. Yes, Barry's right. You go in, you don't necessarily know how it's going to play out over time, and it's a painful decision weighing the price of just more of the same after the Russian plane, after Paris, with a European capital, Brussels, shut down by these people, knowing that they have the territory to which to attract recruits, in which to organize themselves, in which to become stronger, whether that is acceptable. And some people are going to come down on one side, some on the other. You're seeing it right here on the show.
Yes, we are.
I don't think it's acceptable, and I think that we need to be wary simply of saying that because we made some big mistakes in Iraq, we cannot learn from them and do this a lot better.
Let me get Saad here from Columbia, South Carolina. Saad, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm originally from Syria, actually, and I just want to give my opinion here. Mm-hmm. I've been living here for 25 years. I think we're repeating the same mistake we did with Afghanistan and Iraq. We went to Afghanistan, and we didn't finish the job over there. We went to another war right away, and we brought all those extremists with us, basically. And now we're repeating the same mistake. The problem in Syria, we need to isolate, basically, ISIS. There is so many problems over there, started with Bashar al-Assad. We need to solve the problem with Bashar al-Assad. I think he's the main problem that causes ISIS, actually, or brought ISIS to the power.
Saad, let me understand, then. Would you continue with the containment policy with the bombing and all the rest we've seen from the Obama administration so far? Or do you think that we need more troops, NATO and more, U.S., on the ground to address ISIS?
I don't think having troops on the ground is going to solve the problem.
Why not?
Contain. Why not? Because ISIS are recruiting people based on what's happening for the last 4.5 years between Iraq and Syria. We have a government in Syria that is crushing all the Sunni, and the Sunni doesn't have any choice, basically, but going that route. Okay, and the same thing in Iraq. We have a government over there that based on Shia, basically, and is doing the same thing. So we have basically a group of people over there that is doesn't have any choice but join ISIS, basically, because we did not support those people from the beginning. They were moderate Sunni, and they become basically extreme.
Saad, I appreciate your call. Roger, how do you deal with that? The realities of division that will be left on the ground no matter what outcome a U.S. or NATO intervention might have. And you know, Saad says don't go in there because you can't solve that.
Yeah, I don't think it's true to say that a Sunni living in Syria has no choice but to join the Islamic State. Many have joined the Free Syrian Army, other organizations. So I think there are options, certainly for the Sunnis. It's very difficult. There's no question that it's a tough call. But again, I look at the last 4.5 years. Is what we've done up to now in Syria producing anything good? No, it has produced a huge outflow of refugees into Europe. And incidentally, I do agree with the president strongly and strongly disagree with Donald Trump about the need to, of course, be vigilant, but also do everything we can to accommodate people who have fled an absolutely intolerable situation. People said at the time when the red line was set in 2013 that we diverted a disaster by not going in. I can't see a disaster worse than the current one. So the combination of a failed policy and an increasingly potent and imminent threat to all of us, wherever we are, from an ideology that I think is about as close to evil as we have seen anywhere in contemporary times. The combination of those two things to me says to me that, as Matt said, this is a time for the United States and its allies to lead and stand up for what we believe in and protect our societies.
Let me get one more call. Leonard in Watertown, New York. It's military terrain. Leonard, thank you for calling. You're on the air. Time is short.
Really, thank you for having the call. And I'm a soldier. My father fought in Desert Storm. My brother fought in Iraq. I fought in Iraq. And I feel that if we contribute to throw nothing, or we just continue to contribute nothing but soldiers to this problem, we're going to end up with much of the same result that we have in Iraq and Afghanistan. More than a decade, Russia pulled out of Afghanistan for little to show for it. People say we have nothing to show for Iraq, but we do have something to show for it, and that is an increasing population of wounded combat veterans that we can't take care of right now.
So what do we do here, Leonard? What do we do with ISIS?
I hate to say it, but it's an isolation policy. They want Americans over there so they can kill them. But this isn't a magic army that showed up. These are the people. These are the people that continue to contribute to this issue. It is a political problem, and the president is spot on.
Leonard, I appreciate your call as well. I guess, Barry Posen, last word goes to you today. You feel the political pressure that's rising. You see the situation Barack Obama's in. There could be more attacks. Brussels is locked down as we speak. Do you think he'll be able to stay on his restraint track?
It's hard to know whether he'll be able to stay on it or not. And as you say, the political winds are blowing. But I think the debate would be helped if people got a little more serious and realistic about what they mean by dealing with the problem at the source. I mean, if you use the same calculations that General Shinseki used before we invaded Iraq, those calculations do, in fact, yield 100,000 troops needed to pacify ISIS.
There. Well, we are getting down into the nitty-gritty of the debate right here, right now. And you two have helped us do it today. And I'm grateful for that. Barry Posen with Security Studies at MIT, thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure to be with you.
Roger Cohen, columnist with the New York Times, thank you as always, Roger. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
Listeners, thank you for your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.